Blog Talk Radio.
We are on the air with Fan for Racing with Catch Fence, NASCAR weekend preview. And once again, we have a lot of races to talk about this weekend with our preview. And here to help me kind of break it all down for you is our Fan for Racing writer, Steve Dando. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, we're really happy to have you. We announced Steve last Monday night as our new Fan for Racing writer, so definitely be on the lookout for some work from him in the coming days. But we have a ton of racing going on. I'm going to start. We started actually yesterday with the Camping World Truck Series race at Bristol. Tomorrow night is the Xfinity Series race at Bristol. Then we have Saturday night racing at Bristol with the Sprint Cup Series. But before that, or right around the same time, actually, the Can-Am West is going to be racing at Colorado National Speedway. And on Sunday, the ARCA Racing Series is racing at the Illinois State Fairgrounds. So it is going to be an exciting weekend of racing. And Steve, I think what we're going to do is let's start with the ARCA Racing Series, because later on tonight, joining us is going to be Chris Knight from the Catch Fence, and I'm sure he'll have some late-breaking news from Bristol Motor Speedway to share with us when he comes on. Okay, so let's go ahead and start with the ARCA Racing Series. A lot of Grant Infinger won the last race, the Federated Auto Parts that was at Berlin Raceway. And Austin Wayne Self is now up in the second spot. But now this weekend, as I mentioned, they're going to be at Illinois State Fairgrounds for the SuperChevyStores.com Alan Crow 100. That's Sunday, August the 23rd. The race should start around 1:30 p.m. Central Time. And there's quite an entry list for that race.
Okay,
We have Sarah Cornett-Ching that's going to be racing. She's been racing all season long, has been doing very, very well. Let's see, there's Grant Infinger, who was the race winner last time. A.J. Fike is from Illinois, so it's good to see that he's going to be racing that event. David Levine, also an Illinoisan, is going to be in the event from Highland Park. Kimmel Racing has Mark Munier and Will Kimmel will be racing this weekend. From Chillicothe, Missouri, will be Dale Shearer. Tom Hessert is looking to make up some ground this weekend, I'm sure. He's looking to be there. He's from New Jersey, though, so... and then also from Morris, Illinois, Alex Club is going to be racing. So there's quite a few Illinoisans that are going to be in the race. Ryan Unzicker from El Paso, Illinois, will be racing. Kelly Kofsky from Springfield, Illinois, is racing this weekend. Mark Littleton from Aaronsville, Illinois. And I think I've got all the Illinoisans.
Quite a list.
It is indeed. Who's your favorite? Because these races that are coming up are on dirt, so it's a little bit different racing than what they're used to on the asphalt. So do you have any favorites looking at this race for this weekend?
I think the front runners will be there. Obviously, Grant Infinger. I think Sarah Cornett-Ching will do well as well. It's good to see her up near the top of the points there. I think Will Kimmel will do well. He pretty consistent and pretty versatile driver in him. So
there you have it. Now, just so you can mark your calendar, I kind of gave you all the details of this race on Sunday. It will be telecast, or it will be broadcast on CBS Sports Network this Sunday, too. So you can set your TVs to tune into that race at the Illinois State Fairground here in Springfield, Illinois. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that, you know, Grant Enfinger has been doing really well, and I think you can look for him to do really well this weekend. I think all those Illinois drivers that I mentioned, they've raced at Illinois State Fairgrounds before, so I think a lot of those guys are probably going to do pretty well this weekend. You mentioned Sarah Cornette Ching. She has been running steady at the sixth place here in the point standings. I think that she certainly is always a contender week in and week out. Tom Hassert has kind of lost some ground in the point standings, and I really think that maybe Tom Hassert might be one of the drivers to watch this weekend as well.
Uh-huh.
So it should be a fun race to watch. If you're here in Illinois and you have an opportunity to be at the track, get out there and check it out. There's usually some really interesting people there. I know that on Inside ARCA today, they talked with A.J. Fike and a newcomer, Tyler Dipple. They also spoke to. So if you go to arcaracing.com, you can listen to those interviews. So that should be interesting too.
I'm a big fan of anything on dirt. It tends to be exciting. The ever changing surface and track plays an interesting factor into dirt racing.
It really does. And you know, one of my favorite questions of drivers that come in, and I know that they've raced on dirt before, is what are the advantages to being a dirt racer when you come to asphalt? And they all say it's the car control.
Right. And you can see that in the higher levels, as in NASCAR Camping World Series. You can see the guys that have lots of experience on dirt tend to, when they're about to lose it, they seem to be able to kind of save it a little more than the guys that were primarily asphalt drivers their entire careers.
And that is so true, Steve. And, you know, certainly something for fans to keep their eyes on as they watch this race on Sunday. Again, that should start around 1:30 Central Time and will be broadcast on CBS Sports TV. So, I don't know who to pick to win this one. You know, the guys who have the dirt experience are probably the favorites this weekend. We'll have to wait and see what happens, I guess.
Yeah.
But I do think that some of the locals here could really shine pretty well this weekend. And we'll have to keep an eye on what they do. Venturini, Matt Tift is racing with Billy Venturini again this weekend, so that's pretty good. We mentioned Tyler Dipple. He's racing with Lyra Motorsports this weekend, so it'll be interesting to see what he does as well. Anyway, mark your calendars to catch that race, because I think it's going to be a really fun race to watch. I think what we'll do is we'll move on now to the Can-Am West Series that's going to be racing out at Colorado National Speedway. Steve, there's been a really tight points battle that's been taking place in the Can-Am West Series. In fact, the points are tied right now between Chris Eggleston and Noah Gregson. We've had both of them on our show before. They both really want to win this championship, but there's some other guys that are kind of on their heels for that championship as well. including some names here. Ryan Partridge and Grayson Ruz follow behind. Now, the leaders are at 354 points. Ryan Partridge at 348. Grayson Ruz is at 346. Behind them is David Mayhew, who has 338 points. So I think it's a matter of, 16 points that are separating the first place guys, and there's two of them, with the top five guy. So it's a pretty tight championship battle going on there.
Very close, very close.
Yes, indeed. Now, let me just take a look here. There's not that many races left to race in the Can-Am West Series. They're at Colorado this weekend. Then there's, after this weekend, there's only three other races, including Meridian, All-American Speedway, which is always a fan favorite, and then, of course, their season finale that's going to be out at Phoenix International Raceway. So I think these next four races, including this weekend at Colorado, are going to be pretty darned exciting.
Sounds like it. With it that bunched up at the top, I'm sure it's going to be some very exciting racing for the next couple weeks.
Absolutely. Now, let me just mention here, too, there's a couple of newcomers that are going to be at the track. Jack Nugent and Chris Fenton are scheduled to compete in the Napa Toyota 150. Nugent is a native of Colorado, from Lafayette, Colorado. He made a series debut last season, finishing 17th. He competes in the track super late model division, where he's ranked fifth at 304 points. Chris Fenton is from Meridian, Idaho, so I've got a funny feeling that he'll probably be racing at Meridian next week as well. He'll be making his Can-Am West debut Saturday. He's competed at Idaho's Meridian Speedway's Big Five late model division, and he won his first track late model championship there in 2011. So there's a couple of fresh faces to kind of keep your eye on this weekend as well. Qualifying is going to be real important this weekend. In the first 12 Can-Am Pro Series West races at Colorado, 10 of the winners have finished in the top three in qualifying. So those drivers that take a look at qualifying, don't miss that, because those drivers that qualify well out here are probably going to be the drivers that race well.
Right. Always very important to qualify up front, and especially when the series is that tight. It definitely gives you a large advantage.
It does indeed. This particular event is going to be the 10th of 13 races on the 2015 schedule. We already kind of talked about that a little bit. The starting field is 22 cars, including the provisionals. The first 18 cars are going to qualify through two-lap time trials, and the remaining are going to be awarded through the provisional process. So the race is 150 laps. It's going to go on for 56.25 miles. It's a 0.375-mile paved oval with 4 degrees of banking in the straights, and progressive banking to 6 to 12 degrees in the corners. So that should be a lot of fun to watch. We always like short track racing. Okay, now this race is going to be the 13th series visit at Colorado National Speedway as well. So I know Partridge wants to get a first win there, so that should be pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I don't know. Have you ever watched any of the Can-Am races, Steve?
A little bit. I'm not really as well versed as maybe I should be. I've watched it in the past. Not the diehard fan you are. Kind of learning, learning as I go here.
Oh, that's okay. You know, it's funny because Sal is the one who really got me into watching the K&N Pro Series. And I tell you what, it's some really, really good racing. And what's funny is that a few weeks ago, when we were talking about these two series racing at Iowa Speedway, we said that the tight points battle was in the K&N West Series.
Uh-huh.
But within just a few weeks, that points battle has really tightened up in the East as well.
Right.
The East won't be racing now again for a little while. Their next race isn't coming up until, let me take a quick look here. And, their next race isn't coming up until August 29th at VIR, which is going to be another road course race.
Right.
And I'll tell you what, Scott Heckert has been knocking on the door of and he's been gaining points on that championship title. He's currently second.
Mm-hmm.
And I look for him to really pick up some more points on that championship run. And that's only the third race to the end of their season. They only have two more races after VIR at Richmond and Dover.
Yeah,
so
I know.
Look for a tight points battle there.
I know both the East and West series have historically been very competitive. And I know there's been a lot of strong drivers to come out of both series.
There really have been. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in both of these series as the season is winding down. Three races left in the K&N East. Four races left in the K&N West, and a lot of hard racing is going to happen, I think, over these next few weeks, as you mentioned.
Right.
So these are do-not-miss races, and I really, those folks of you that are out in the Colorado National Speedway area, please get out there to the track and check out these races this weekend with the K&N West Series. There's going to be some other races that are taking place there, too. So you definitely don't want to miss those. In fact, let me get that info again, because there are some tight point battles going on across the board in all of these series that are racing there this weekend. And so it's going to be a fun weekend out there at Colorado National. Let's see. There's championship battles are heating up all over the place. Three NASCAR Wheel and All-American Series divisions are joining the K&N West on the track Saturday night at Colorado National. So the pro trucks are going to be out there. They've got the South Philly Cheesesteaks late models are going to be racing, and the figure eights. Can you imagine racing figure eights? That's got to be the most exciting racing around.
Pretty wild. I've never seen that yet in person, but that's something I would like to see at some point.
Yeah, and all of those races really have some tight championship point battles taking place right now, too. So fans definitely don't want to miss out on that.
I'm looking at the West standings, and it looks like it's about the top five are separated by about 14 or 15 points is what it looks like, maybe a little more.
I think it's 16 points, yeah.
16 from, yeah.
Yeah, it's just amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So David Mayhew is a local favorite out there, as is Ryan Partridge. Those guys have been racing out there for a while. They're kind of veterans of the area, and a lot of people thought that they'd be runaways for the championship. But I think Chris Eggleston, Noah Gregson, and Grayson Raz all had a different idea about that.
And I'm looking at the standings now, and I see several drivers that I'm affiliated with, which just kind of shows how strong the up-and-coming field is, that there's some guys that are already well-known drivers that are in these series.
Yes, there really are. Now, I wanted to take a look at the entry list once again, because I know that sometimes there are some other drivers, like Cole Custer is known to go and race some of these races as well.
Mm-hmm.
He having raced in the West last season. James Bickford is another local favorite out there.
Uh-huh.
That fans will want to keep their eyes on. Brandon McReynolds has had he won the double headers at Iowa Speedway, both in May and then again in August. He went out
uh-huh.
there and won. And Nicole Behar, definitely keep an eye on this gal. She's a NASCAR Next driver, and she's really been turning a lot of heads out there in the Can-Am West. And she's ranked 10th right now. She's breaking records right now as the highest finishing female in the series history after placing second at California's Irwindale Speedway. So, yeah, there's a lot to watch out there for those fans that are out in the area. All right. Now, with that, let's see. We've covered the ARCA Racing Series at the Illinois State Fairgrounds, Can-Am West at Colorado. Now, set your DVRs for that Can-Am West race. They're always fun to watch. They'll be on NBCSN next Thursday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and that's when the broadcast of that race will be on. The race out at the track this weekend is at 7 p.m. I'm sorry, I don't know if that's at 7 p.m. or not. That's the replay. I apologize. You have to check your Colorado National Speedway website for the start time, but that should be a really fun race to watch. If you're out there, I really highly recommend getting out to your local short track and watching this race. All right. Now, with that, I think we are ready to move on. I think I'm going to go to the Xfinity Series before we move on to the Sprint Cup Series here. Xfinity Series, there's a couple of people hitting some milestones in that series. So let's start with kind of talking about that. Kevin Harvick actually has a chance to hit two milestones this weekend. He's attempting to make his 325th Xfinity Series start this weekend at Bristol. He's 15th on the all-time starts list, and that's just 6 behind 14th place Todd Bodine. But Kevin Harvick can also post his 175th top five finish this weekend at Bristol. Harvick is ranked second on the all-time top five list. Again, he is behind Kyle Busch at 179, who is first. So that's pretty interesting.
And both of those drivers I have factoring into the upcoming race. Both of those guys, I think, are going to be up at the front. But Bristol is definitely a wild track, and kind of anything can happen.
It sure can. And they're both going to be racing, as happens quite a bit. I know Ryan Blaney is actually doing triple duty this weekend, so that's going to be fun to see, too, especially after he won at the Camping World Truck Series race this past weekend. Now, Joey Gase is attempting to make his 100th Xfinity Series start this weekend at Bristol, and he's just behind Martin Truex Jr., who has 103 starts in the Xfinity Series. So just a couple of milestones there. The Sprint Cup drivers, we were just talking about that are going to be in the race this weekend, Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, Kyle Larson, and Denny Hamlin will all compete in the Food City 300. Busch has 7 series wins at that track. Harvick has 5, the second most at that track. So you're right. Both of those guys will without doubt factor into the race. Okay, now someone else I think fans need to keep their eyes on is Daniel Suarez. He's gaining more points on the lead in the Sunoco Rookie of the Year points. He's now 20 points over second place Darrell Wallace Jr., and it doesn't seem like it was that long ago they were tied.
both big names to watch kind of in Sprint Cup as well. I think they're both going to end up having big careers in the long run.
I totally agree with you, Steve. I think without a doubt we're going to be seeing both of these fellows racing up in the Sprint Cup series before all is said and done. Now, Suarez didn't have such a good race this past in the Camping World Truck Series last night, but it's a track that he did really well at. He finished second to Joey Logano earlier this season, so I look for Suarez to be a hot contender this weekend.
As do I. He's one of my ones to watch out of people I'd made note of.
Okay. Now, another thing, we talked about this a little bit with regard to the Can-Am West, but starting up front puts the odds in these drivers' favor. So watching the qualifying is going to be really important for this Xfinity Series race. 75% is what the odds are. It says drivers starting from the front row because six of the last eight Xfinity Series races have been won from the or second starting position.
I'm a little surprised that that isn't a higher number than that, being as small as the track is.
It's really amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So do keep your eye on, if you've got a fantasy team, if you watch qualifying, I think that will be a very telling idea of who may win the race. That might help you on your fantasy picks this weekend. Now, the number 22 of Team Penske has won the last two consecutive races at Bristol. So look for the number 22. That Ryan Blaney is driving to be going for their third consecutive win.
Can't ever count Team Penske out, no matter what series you're talking about. They're just that competitive and that strong a team all the time.
They absolutely are, and I just think that this is going to be interesting to see what Ryan Blaney does. I think he has a very good chance of going for that win again this season, this weekend. But before Team Penske had their last two wins, Joe Gibbs Racing, Kyle Busch dominated the Xfinity Series at Bristol. He won six of the last 10 races between 2010 and 2015 at Bristol, three of which were from the front row starting positions. So definitely Kyle Busch is always a threat at Bristol.
And he's kind of on a hot streak now from the way things have been going the last couple races.
He really is. And he's been on a hot streak, not just in the Sprint Cup Series, but in the Xfinity Series as well. So he's definitely one to watch, especially to see where he qualifies for this race. But two other drivers I think fans will want to keep their eyes on this weekend. Ty Dillon and Chase Elliott both want to go after Chris Buescher in the championship point standings. Chris Buescher has the lead still, but Dillon has made four starts at Bristol, posting two top fives, four top tens, and an average finish of 5.5, four positions better than Buescher's average starting position. So he could gain some points this weekend.
Kind of there's that little grouping of young drivers, Ryan Blaney, Chase Elliott. Those guys seem to really always be in the pack to fight for the win.
They really are. So, 5.5 average finish is not bad either. So I would look for Ty Dillon to be looking for that as well. In his 21 starts this season, he's posted six top fives, 15 top tens, and an average finish of 18.9 for this season. That's not just at Bristol. The 5.5 is just at Bristol. He's second among the championship contenders behind Buescher. And Dylan's season-to-date diver rating is 97, so that's not bad either. Chase Elliott is just 1 point behind Dylan and 25 points behind Chris Buescher. For his season, he has 8 top fives and a series leading 17 top tens in 21 races. Elliott has excelled at Bristol in his three starts. He's posted 3 top tens and an average finish of 6.0. So he's not far, he's not terribly far ahead of where Ty Dillon is with average finish, and both of them have better average finishes at Bristol than Chris Buescher. Over the last 4 tracks, which include Bristol, Road America, Darlington, and Richmond, both Elliott at 3.5 and Dillon at 11.8 have better average finishes than Chris Buescher, who's at 15.4. So talk about a heating up points battle. This is something for fans to really watch as well.
Sounds like those guys could make up some points on Chris Buescher if everything turns out right, and that could really heat up the race for the championship.
I really think it could, and, you know, that's just something what we try to do is give fans things to look for as they go into these races and to be aware of as these races are happening. Now, with 12 races to go, Chris Buescher is still the man to beat. He's been consistently at the top of the point standings. So he's got 0 DNFs for this season. He's leading the series with 10 top 5 finishes and 21 starts. His average finish overall for the season is 8.1. His driver rating is 99.2. Buescher has made only 4 starts at Bristol, posting 1 top 5, 3 top 10s, and his average finish is actually 9.0. Earlier this season at Bristol, Buescher started 14th, and he drove up to a third-place finish. So he's not going to make it easy on Dylan and Elliott.
Right. And he also has 2 wins where it looks like neither of them have a win this season yet. And looks like the next one down would be Regan Smith, who has 1 win this year.
So absolutely. Now, the other thing that's kind of exciting about this particular race is they're going back to the Dash for Cash program. This is round 3, and Regan Smith is the only driver who's been in all 3 rounds. So it's going to be kind of fun to see what happens with that as well. So Daniel Suarez, Elliott Sadler, Ryan Blaney, as well as Regan Smith, are all competing for that $100,000 cash bonus this weekend. So another thing for you to just be aware of for this weekend, for that Dash for Cash bonus. That's always a kind of a fun little offshoot.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go on. Who's your favorite to win in the Xfinity Series?
Realistically, I have a feel Ohioan Ryan Blaney is going to do it. That's kind of the feeling I get. He's had a good run of late, and kind of cheering him on, and that's who I think is likely to win. But there is really, I mean, there's a handful of a good 4 or 5 people that really have a strong shot at this race.
Absolutely, and certainly with the Sprint Cup drivers that are also participating, you know, I usually try to pick, somebody who's not a Sprint Cup driver,
right,
to be the winner. But it's really tough to do at Bristol. I don't know. I want to say Chris Buescher, But I also want to say Daniel Suarez,
right.
Because I think Daniel Suarez is trying to make up for being runner-up last time around here. And
right.
He says he's learned a lot since then. He learned a lot from the experience, and he's going back with intentions to win. So I'm going to put Daniel Suarez out there on the table for this weekend in the Xfinity Series.
I also like Ty Dillon, too. I mean, I think Ty Dillon has a shot as well.
Okay. If you're going to pick a Sprint Cup?
Kyle Busch. I kind of
yeah.
think that with both races, with the Sprint Cup race as well as the Xfinity race, I think he has a good shot at both. I think he's really coming on strong after that injury, so I'm kind of excited to see what he'll do.
It's kind of hard not to discount him, right? I mean, it seems like he's a logical choice.
Yeah, and kind of any vehicle he steps in any series, he seems to be right up front.
Absolutely, and Bristol is one of his best tracks. Now, I also forgot to mention Hermie Sadler. He's usually one of the commentators. He's actually going to be in the race this weekend. It's his first race since last season at Richmond, and all of us already know that Hermie is the brother of championship contender Elliott Sadler. He'll be in the number 26 car with crew chief Kevin Evans, and he's racing for car owner James Whitener. So watch for Hermie on the track this weekend, too.
It's always good to see him get a ride, just the fact that he's a commentator as well. He's definitely an interesting character himself.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Bristol Night Racing is one of the fan favorites. I think every fan loves to watch the night racing in August at Bristol. I know we've had plenty of parties in the backyard where we watched it on
yeah.
the big screen TV in the backyard had a lot of fun.
I've done some writing for a Swedish website, and I know that the Swedes all want to come over for that specific race. Daytona, you know, all the really short tracks excite them, as well as, you know, Daytona, Talladega, the big races. But I know that's a big one for them. They find that really exciting.
Yes, I can see where that would be the case. And not just in Sweden, but probably a lot of other countries, if they had one race to pick.
Yeah,
I suspect that might be right at the top of one of the races folks would pick.
I know some NASCAR fans in the UK as well, and that is another one that they want to always come over for that race as well. It's kind of amazing how big an international following that NASCAR of late has really had. I know of a bunch of Scandinavians, a bunch of British people. It's a big sport worldwide, even where it's hard to watch on television. I mean, they'll get up at 3 or 4 in the morning just to watch a regular race.
Exactly, and that's what's so amazing. I think a lot of fans here probably don't realize just how big it is internationally, but it is. It's an international sport for sure, and that's why NASCAR has the Euro Series, the Toyota Mexico Series,
right.
The Canadian Tire Series. They race internationally, and it's a big deal for a lot of these countries when NASCAR comes to town. So
right.
Definitely a big deal. All right. Let's go ahead and move on to the Sprint Cup Series. Again, this probably tops the list for a lot of fans. Is the Saturday night race at Bristol for the Sprint Cup Series. And Logano is the winner from the... He's looking for his second straight August Bristol win Saturday night. Last year, the 25-year-old Team Penske driver passed Matt Kenseth with just 44 laps to go for his first Sprint Cup Series victory at the half-mile track. Now, when Logano returned this April, he started sixth, but he finished 42nd after colliding with his teammate, Brad Kolaski, on lap 19. You probably remember that.
Yes.
And it was kind of a big deal when that happened. So I think Logano's going to be looking for redemption after that. He placed seventh at Michigan last week following his win at Watkins Glen. He ranked second overall in the points, and he's fifth on the chase grid. So Logano's coming on pretty strong here.
And you said last year he was battling Matt Kenseth, who was the April race winner.
That's right.
So it might be a battle between the two of them. That could be an exciting thing to play out for the Bristol weekend.
I definitely think it could be, because Matt Kenseth is another one that seems to be building up some momentum. That whole Joe Gibbs Racing organization just seems to be on a tear. I think they've won like six of the last seven races, which is just amazing.
Right. And I know they had a rough couple seasons prior to this season, so it's kind of good to see them back in victory lane. They're one of the premier teams in the sport. I like to see them do well. I like to see Team Penske do well. Obviously, Hendrick's cars do well. Good to see the strong teams doing well to kind of keep the sport going.
The other thing I think is interesting about that, Steve, is that, you know, this momentum that Joe Gibbs Racing is on right now seems to have taken place with Kyle Busch's return.
Right.
And I think what Matt Kenseth is proving is that it's not just Kyle Busch that's doing well at Joe Gibbs Racing, but that entire Joe Gibbs Racing organization. And then you factor in, you know, Daniel Suarez is a Joe Gibbs Racing driver as well.
Yeah.
And he's been doing really well. I think they're definitely going to be championship contenders when the chase begins.
I think so as well. I'd kind of like to see Roush's team kind of do better of late. It seems like they've had a hard couple seasons, and it's kind of like they seem like they don't know what they need to do to turn the organization around.
Yeah, I was watching NASCAR America earlier this week, and Jeff Burton did a really nice feature on Jack Roush. And Jack Roush indicated that, yeah, he knows that they're having their troubles right now, but he's well aware of the hard work that his entire organization is doing to get the ship turned around. And he knows that these things they're kind of cyclical.
Right.
And he's looking to really bring back his Roush Fenway race team and get it back on track. But with only three races left before the chase begins, we've got Bristol, Darlington, and Richmond. Talk about great racing over the next 3 weeks. This is going to be a lot of fun, and a lot of drivers are going to, you know, time's running out for some of these drivers to get their one win and in for the championship. Five remaining drivers on the chase grid have to either visit victory lane or stay high enough in the point standings where they don't get bumped out by a new winner outside the top 16. And that's the vulnerability for them. If there is a new winner over these next three races, those five drivers, the one at the bottom is going to get bumped out. So
Do you have any outside contenders that you think could possibly be an upsetter in the upcoming races? Anyone specifically to keep your eye on?
Well, that's a tough call. Jeff Gordon hasn't won yet. He's traditionally really good at Bristol. Clint Bowyer, perhaps, could be another possibility.
Yeah.
Casey Kane is demonstrating some confidence right now, despite the fact that his team has run into some troubles. Those are all guys that absolutely have got to win if they're going to get in to this chase. Now, some of them might get in on points. Clint Bowyer's kind of vulnerable right now.
Right.
Casey Kane is very vulnerable right now. Tony Stewart could be one of those outside guys. He hasn't had a good season so far, But if they want to get into this chase, they're going to have to get out there and win one of these races. And maybe Bristol is their opportunity.
Right, right. And I think Clint Bowyer, that's an interesting story as well with Rob Kaufman and kind of him getting released. I'd like to see him make the chase and hopefully find greener pastures on a new team for 2016. And Casey Kane is one of those guys who can kind of surprise you. You know what I mean? Sometimes he's really up there and sometimes he isn't. So you're right. I mean, potentially he could be a guy that sneaks into the chase by winning one of these upcoming races.
Absolutely. And I really think that it's going to be fun to watch because, I don't know, I want to say you can almost count on an upset somewhere down the road here. But at the same time, I'm not so sure it's going to happen. So, you know, the upset makes it a more exciting story for sure. But fans definitely don't want to miss any of these next three races. Because
I'd love to see Gordon do it as well, just because it's his final season. And, it would just be an exciting, great story for the sport.
Exactly right. Now, let's see, I mentioned the five drivers that are kind of on the bubble. We mentioned Gordon, Casey Kane, and Jeremy Stewart. I just want to make sure we're mentioning everybody here. Really look for a lot to go on there. Now, there's some other milestone starts that are going to be happening this weekend as well. Ryan Newman and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Are logging for Ryan Newman. It's his 500th start, and for Ricky Stenhouse Jr., it's going to be his 100th series start. So there's a couple of milestones there. For his career, Newman boasts 17 wins, 102 top fives, 211 top tens, and a high championship finish of second just last season. His first win came from the Coors Light pole position at New Hampshire Motor Speedway on September 15th of 2002. But Newman has never, ever visited Victory Lane at Bristol Motor Speedway. So that might be a story to keep an eye on this weekend. Now, Stenhouse is a two-time Xfinity Series champion. He has yet to win his first Sprint Cup Series race, but this weekend could be his first. I'm not so sure about that, but the 27-year-old Roush Fenway Racing driver has logged finishes of fourth, sixth, and second in his last three starts at Bristol, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is.
For his career, Stenhouse claims three top fives and nine top tens. So apparently he's pretty good at Bristol. I hadn't really remembered it that way. But
I didn't realize that either.
So definitely that's a driver to keep your eye on this weekend.
Could be a really interesting story if he was to win. That could upset a lot of things. And, I didn't realize that either. That's very interesting.
Yeah, I think that would be really big news if Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Were to win that Bristol race. And it would really throw off those five drivers we talked about that are on the bubble right now. One of them would get bumped out. Now, two people, before we go to them, let's talk about the Rainbow Warrior, Gordon. He's going to have a throwback paint scheme at Bristol. This is going to be his last Bristol race. Gordon has always been really good at Bristol, and it's going to be, you're going to feel like it's Flashback Friday when Gordon takes to the track in his throwback paint scheme at Bristol.
Yeah, I know that's been all over NASCAR.com, and a lot of people have been buzzing about that.
We want to keep the soda pop flowing. We need fresh ideas. How about you?
Okay, so definitely fans will want to keep their eye on that as well. The old Rainbow Warrior car that he drove in the early days, he's won 3 Sprint Cup Series championships. He's made 52 trips to Victory Lane. He's taken the checkered flag at 17 different tracks, and he also captured the Rookie of the Year award and won the Sprint Cup Series All-Star Race. He's currently 15th on the Chase grid. He can qualify for the Chase based on points if it were to end today, which, of course, we know it's not ending today. Right now, he sits 55 points ahead of Eric Almirola on the cutoff line, but could get into trouble if he has a poor showing, but could really make it a lot easier on himself if he can get a victory.
Right. Which I know tons of fans will be cheering him on for that, myself included. I'd like to see him make the Chase, and I don't know if he'll be able to win the championship, but it would be nice to see him be in the mix toward the end there.
Absolutely, and I think it would be a popular win, a very nostalgic win, if Jeff Gordon were to take that Rainbow Warrior car to Victory Lane this weekend.
Very much so.
Right now, he's tied for active lead with 5 wins. He claims the most pole awards among drivers with 5. his loop stats at Bristol is the second highest average running position at 9.954, and his driver rating at that track is 100.3. So he's pretty good at Bristol, and I think a lot of people would be a little bit teary-eyed to see Gordon in the tree lane at Bristol Motor Speedway.
I think so as well. There'll be tons of fans cheering them on, and I know that was kind of, he was the big driver once I got interested in NASCAR at about 13 or 14, so there's a little bit of nostalgia there for me as well.
Okay. But there's a couple of brothers that are going to make it hard on everybody at Bristol Motor Speedway, and that would be the Busch brothers, what they're calling the Super Busch brothers. They love that track. Kyle and Kurt both claim 5 wins at the world's fastest half mile. They're tied with Jeff Gordon for lead among the active drivers at the track. Kurt won at Bristol last in 2006. He's also visited Victory Lane there in 2002 and 2004, and he swept the track in 2013. But Kyle's last Bristol race win came in 2011. He also took the checkered flag there in 2007, 2010, and he swept the track in 2009. Both Kurt and Kyle are having very strong seasons. As we know, Kyle has only raced a partial season and is still ranked way ahead of some people who have driven the entire season.
Right.
He's second on the Chase grid with 4 wins. He has 5 top 5 finishes in only 18 starts since returning from his broken leg. Kurt is 7th on the Chase grid with 2 wins. He has 8 top 5s, 13 top 10s, and Kurt also boasts the second most laps led at Bristol at 721, and the second highest driver rating at 106.2 in the series. So Kurt could be one of the drivers to watch, as will Kyle.
My money's all on Kyle. I just have a feeling about him this weekend. So I think that might be how things go. And certainly both of them have dominated at Bristol, and that's definitely well documented.
Okay. But giving them a run for their money is going to be Joe Gibbs Racing and Matt Kenseth. Matt Kenseth is showing that he's going to be a championship contender, as he's coming off of his win at Michigan International Speedway. He led 146 of 200 laps at that track, which was a very dominating performance. It's the most led on the track longer than a mile since Jimmy Johnson paced the field for 255 laps at Texas on November 3rd in 2013. Kenseth's three victories are the third most in the Sprint Cup Series. He has 9 bonus points for the Challenger round of the Chase, one for each win, and he ranks third on the Chase grid now. So he's going to go for his second straight victory and sweep Bristol Motor Speedway, where he won in April. Will he do it? He's on a roll.
Definitely be up front fighting, no doubt about that. And I think all in all, there's kind of a lot of interesting stories for Bristol. There's kind of a lot of stuff happening now, and there's kind of a lot of guys that could be up front, and there's a few spoilers out there who could pull some surprises.
Who are your dark horse picks? Who would be a dark horse pick for you?
That's a good question. Martin Truex Jr., I think, possibly. Dale Earnhardt Jr. Logano. I mean, again, Team Penske, it's hard for them not to be up front. Those would kind of be my main ones.
Those are kind of the same ones that I would probably pick. Martin Truex Jr., I think, has been having a spectacular year. And for a one-car operation, I think that's pretty exciting for Martin Truex Jr. and his career. He's had to overcome quite a few challenges, not just professionally but also personally, and yet he's having one of the best seasons of his career.
Right.
So he's been one of the more consistent drivers, although he's had a few bad races. It's been few and far between. He's pretty consistent.
Yeah.
And I think it would be great to see him pull an upset this weekend
I think so as well. And I know just a few seasons ago he was wondering if he'd find a full-time ride and if he would be able to stay in the sport. So it's great to see him kind of turning things around, and like you said, he's gone through a lot, you know, professionally as well as personally, with his girlfriend there having ovarian cancer. So he's one hard not to root for, and especially since he's from a small team that's, you know, everybody's based in Charlotte and they're based out in Denver. So you kind of gotta root them on a little bit.
Got to root for the underdog, and I think Martin Truex Jr. is our most favorite underdog. Everybody's happy when Martin Truex Jr.
Right,
makes it to victory lane. It's always a popular win. And NASCAR's most popular driver, who doesn't love it when Dale Earnhardt Jr. is celebrating in victory lane, especially at a track like Bristol Motor Speedway, where his dad was so good.
A lot of history there that kind of is associated with Dale Earnhardt Jr. as well. Like you said, kind of people think of his father as well when the history there at Bristol. So
absolutely. So if I were to ask you for your race winner pick at this point, who would be your race winner pick?
I think I still have to stick with Kyle Busch. I just have a feeling about him. I would say he's the guy to win this weekend.
He's the guy to keep your eye on this weekend. Well, you know what? Joining us now is our co-host, Chris Knight.
Sure.
Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're always glad to have you on the show, Chris, and I know you're right there at Bristol Motor Speedway. We're talking about race picks for the Sprint Cup Series. Who would be your race pick to win?
Gosh, it's hard to say because this is Bristol, and anything can happen, and that's what the reputation, you know, you think back to last night's NASCAR Camping World Truck Series race, where Cole Custer looked like he had the win in the bag, and then obviously a lap car spun directly in his path and wiped out any chance for him to get his second win of the season. So when it comes to Bristol, you like to think of someone who really does well and dominates at Bristol. But when it comes to Bristol, you look at the guys that have speed. So Kyle Busch looks like he'll be a favorite. Kurt Busch will be a favorite. Kevin Harvick being a favorite. And then you think of somebody like Carl Edwards. But it'd be hard to go wrong with any of the Joe Gibbs Racing Toyotas this weekend at Bristol Motor Speedway.
And that's kind of where I'm headed too, Chris. I'm kind of thinking Joe Gibbs Racing is going to be tough to beat, but I'm going to pick Matt Kenseth for this weekend. I think Matt Kenseth has started a roll, and he can be really good at Bristol Motor Speedway as well. We've seen some really good racing from Matt at that track. So I'm going to throw Matt Kenseth's name into the ring as a potential winner this weekend.
Well, I mean, of course,
when it comes to
Matt Kenseth, you think of not only last week's winner at Michigan International Speedway, but you also think of Matt Kenseth is the most recent winner at Bristol Motor Speedway, winning in April at 0.533-mile racetrack. So it's going to be interesting to see if Matt Kenseth can duplicate that success at Bristol Motor Speedway. But, you know, you just have to tune in and watch for Saturday night, because 500 laps is a lot of laps to go around at Bristol, and anything can happen.
Okay, now we asked Steve about his dark horse pick. I'm going to ask you the same question. Who would be your dark horse pick?
Did you ask for my Xfinity?
No, for Sprint Cup, your Sprint Cup dark horse pick.
Wow, that's really hard to say. I'm going to go with Tony Stewart. I think Tony Stewart's had a lot of speed over the last couple of weeks, and I think he had a top 10 finish there earlier this spring. So he's someone who has been in the headlines this week for a lot of different reasons concerning his team for 2015 and 2016. But I think as a dark horse, you can't go wrong with Tony Stewart.
Absolutely not. And I think that's a great dark horse pick. Tony Stewart, I think, would be I think it would be a popular win amongst the fans as well.
Well, I think it'd be a popular win amongst the fans, but I think it'd be a popular win among the Stewart Haas Racing camp. Everybody's been wondering. It's been a long time since we've seen Stewart Haas Racing bring Tony Stewart to victory lane. And obviously, he's had things that we'll never have to imagine going through, hopefully, in our lifetime. But for him to be able to pull off a win, it would help him in more ways than one, not only to get back in victory lane, but also into the taste of the Sprint Cup.
Yep, that's so true. And like you say, fans are going to have to tune in this weekend to check this out. Qualifying is going to be a big deal. Those who start up front probably have the best chance of making it. But anything can happen at Bristol. So definitely tune in for this race. We're talking Saturday night racing under the lights at Bristol Motor Speedway. It doesn't get any better than that. It's going to be on NBCSN, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, with a green flag sometime around 7:30, and that's Saturday, August the 22nd. Also, keep in mind, it'll be on PRN Radio as well as Sirius XM Channel 90. They're going 500 laps for 266.5 miles. Okay, so with that, we do have Steve Dando with us. Steve, with Chris on the line here with us now, you mentioned a little bit earlier some of the things that are going, you know, we had big news from Michael Waltrip Racing this weekend, and you mentioned that a little bit earlier. And Chris, I want to kind of get your take on what's going on. It sounds like they're closing their doors at the end of the 2015 season, and Clint Bowyer is a free agent at this point.
Well, here's the facts that we do know. We do know that Clint Bowyer has been released from any obligation for the 2000 NASCAR Sprint Cup Series season under Michael Waltrip Racing. So that opens him the opportunity to go wherever he wants, whether that's with Rob Kaufman to Chip Ganassi Racing, where he takes a ride in one of the teams that's been rumored here in the last 2 days about him going for. But as far as Michael Waltrip Racing closes, the door will close on a full-time series team. However, Michael Waltrip Racing has commitments for next year's Daytona 500, so it'll be interesting to see how those developments play forward moving forward. He doesn't have a contract with Toyota for next season, so it'll be interesting to see if they're able to work out something with Toyota, or will Michael Waltrip farm that sponsorship out and go drive for another team for next year's Daytona 500. A lot of unanswered questions. There seems to be more questions than answers at this point. However, Michael Waltrip pretty much said, you know, that all good things must come to end, and the chapter is getting ready to close at Michael Waltrip on the as a full-time team. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with the Aaron sponsorship. Aaron's sponsors released a statement this week and said that they wanted to work with him before, and they're reviewing their options. So we'll have to see what happens as far as the Aaron sponsorship go. But I will say this, about Michael Waltrip Racing. With the closing of MWR, the teams that had been with Toyota from the start, including Red Bull Racing, Bill Davis Racing, and Michael Waltrip Racing, you're now at the close of all the Toyota teams that were with the manufacturer when they first started in Sprint Cup Series racing, and that's a crying shame.
That really is quite a change, and I really get the feel, Chris, and I wanted to get your thought on this as well as your thoughts, Steve, is that, you know, we've been kind of, Zach wrote an article about Michael Waltrip Racing and thinking that they might do better if they collaborated with Joe Gibbs Racing. And this might be the explanation for why they weren't collaborating for the entire season, is maybe they've known all along that it was going to come to this by the end of the season. And it sounds like maybe he was frozen out of the whole Toyota conversation. So that leads me to believe, and I know I'm speculating here, so let me make that clear, but it seems to me that means that a lot of these drivers are going to be going to teams other than Toyota teams. Chris?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that question was for Steve.
Oh, it's for both of you.
I would agree. I'm sorry, Chris.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say I would agree, and it's kind of sad to see that happening to MWR and Clint Bowyer. Michael Waltrip Racing looked like early on in early on in the start of their organization, it looked like they were going to be a fairly successful Toyota team, and it kind of seems like, you know, they got their first win two seasons into it, and it looked like they were going to be a contender, and kind of unfortunately that never happened, and it is sad to see the original Toyota teams are no longer, and I kind of wonder, you know, Michael Waltrip Racing will have, you know, probably a Daytona and a Talladega car, but, you know, how serious of a team are they likely to be? And it's kind of sad to see that happen to the entire organization, those engineers, the people that work in the shop, et cetera. You know, where will they end up?
Absolutely. Chris?
Here's my thing with Michael Waltrip Racing, Sharon. The landscape forever changed for Michael Waltrip Racing when the Richmond Spingate-Yano came to play. Struggling to catch up, and they were never able to catch up. And just simply the elements lined up where the sponsorship just wasn't there, and there was no faith or confidence in the team, and Rob Kaufman was seeing the writing on the wall, so he had to do what he had to do to remain a viable part of this sport. And unfortunately, that'll leave a lot of people jobless here at the end of the 2015 season, but I'm confident between whatever team Bowyer goes to and other new teams that may float into this picture, that those employees will be fine, and they'll all have jobs for the 2016 season. Some may find to go do other things. So we'll just have to wait and see. But the downfall of Michael Waltrip Racing came in that September night at Richmond International Raceway, in my opinion.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that was the beginning of the end for Michael Waltrip Racing, not just with his sponsors, but with Toyota and all the way around. I just think it sealed their fate from that moment forward. And it's very sad, but at the same time, you just don't do those kind of things. And they did it so poorly at Richmond, and it really sealed their fate from that point forward. And you know, I think, all of these guys are going to fall on their feet. They know that that's what happens in this business sometimes, and especially if one of those teams goes over to Chip Ganassi, a lot of those drivers that are working at Michael Waltrip now just may end up working over at Chip Ganassi Racing.
Right.
So I think that it's sad. We're seeing the end of a chapter for that organization, and but we'll move forward from here. And hopefully it is a very strong message, you know, for the other teams as far as the integrity of the sport. And I know I'm putting a lot on the line by saying that, but seriously, I do think that that what they did was a definite no-no, and I think the message is loud and clear all throughout the garage. Okay. Go ahead, Chris.
I just agree with what you said, and you know, so we'll have to see what happens. So.
Okay. Well, I really wish the best. David Reagan is the one I probably feel the worst for. He moved from front row racing, motorsports, and then this happened at Michael Waltrip Racing. I don't know if there's going to be an open door for him at front row racing motorsports, or if he'll end up going with an entirely different team. Your thoughts in that regard, Chris and Steve?
I feel the one that I'm not feeling, Sharon, I don't feel sorry for David Reagan. He's had plenty of opportunities to drive for some of the most greatest teams in this sport, including Joe Gibbs Racing and Roush Family Racing. I feel for somebody like Brett Moffitt, who has clinged to Michael Waltrip Racing for these last several years, just hoping and biding for a time, and now Brett Moffitt will end his 2015 season without a contract for next year, and it may be too late, too little too late for Brett Moffitt to find something. I can only hope that Front Row Motorsports may consider him for a viable opportunity with their program in 2016, but that remains to be seen. But I don't feel bad for David Reagan. I feel the worst for Brett Moffitt.
Oh, okay.
That's a good point, and he kind of had a few really good drives, you know, with MWR that kind of helped him, you know, he helped get his name out there, and I'm sure he'll, as you guys mentioned earlier, I'm sure he'll land on his feet. I'm not sure if it'll be a Sprint Cup ride, but he'll, you know, he'll end up in, you know, probably, I'm guessing, in Xfinity or you know, who knows, Camping World Truck Series, perhaps. I'm sure he'll be okay, but yeah, I mean, that's hate to see that happen to those, you know, both of those drivers. And I mean, compared to some of the facilities of the other teams, I mean, Michael Waltrip Racing pumped a lot of money into that, and it's kind of sad to see all of it kind of, you know, not work out. But it kind of is what it is, and like you said earlier, the, you know, people move on and things will work out with different organizations.
Okay, but Chris, you make a really good point with regard to Brett Moffitt, and we certainly do hope that he does land on his feet, because we'd like to see him back out there on the track. But some other news that is out there this week, Danica Patrick, the question has finally been answered. Did you go to the announcement?
Oh, Danica, no. I was at Bristol for covering truck practice.
Okay. But she has a new sponsor for the 2016 season, Nature's Bakery, is it?
Nature's Bakery.
Okay. So Danica Patrick.
28 races.
Okay. So the question has been answered for those fans who thought Danica Patrick was on the way out. It's not true. She is definitely going to be with Stuart Haas Racing with Nature's Bakery on her car.
And she has, don't forget, she renewed her contract with Michael Waltrip Racing as well.
No.
Yeah,
Stuart. You said Michael Waltrip Racing.
Yeah, Stuart Haas.
Stuart Haas Racing, excuse me. She renewed. She renewed her partnership with them. So.
Yes, so that is all good and well at Stuart Haas Racing. Okay, any other news you want to make sure we talk about tonight, Chris?
I think that was the biggest. Obviously those are the big stories coming in. We'll see more storylines coming in. Clip Boyer will address the media tomorrow at Bristol Motor Speedway, so it'll be interesting to see what he addresses. And how he addresses those questions, I expect him to dodge some of those questions, but we'll have to see what happens. I thought the truck race last night was a great truck race as well, and we'll see some news stemming. Brad Keselowski obviously offered the news. So I call it the worst kept secret in the Formula Truck Series garage. Alex Tagliani will drive the number 19 next weekend at Canadian Tire Motorsport Park.
Yeah, that is not a surprise. So Toyota did come out with a statement. They're wishing the best of luck to everybody involved with regard to the whole situation with Michael Waltrip Racing as well. Give us a flavor for what's going on out there at Bristol Motor Speedway. Your thoughts about the Camping World Truck Series race last night?
Well, I thought the NASCAR Camping World. I was surprised how quickly that race went last night. It seemed like we got to lap 150, and we were like, oh my God, there's only 50 laps left. And then, unfortunately, we got that caution involving Cole Custer and Spencer Gallagher, which wound up ending both those drivers' nights, unfortunately. And then Mother Nature decided to soak the track for a little bit. Thankfully, NASCAR and the Air Titans were able to do a masterful job of getting that track died very quickly, and we were able to go back. You know, you thought Matt Crafton had it in the bag, and then Ty Dillon spun with four laps to go, and that wonder if, and then Ryan Blaney was able to take advantage of Crafton's stumble on the restart and seal away and bring Brad Keselowski Racing back-to-back wins in Thunder Valley. So Matt Crafton had to settle for six, but he left wondering what could have been. But I thought it was a great job for Ryan Blaney. He kept his cool and calm and composure after getting penalized early in the race, where he had to make a green flag pit stop, and then fortunately got the lucky dog. And his truck just drove so beautifully on the bottom of the racetrack that he was able to work his way back to the front and get his fourth career victory. So I thought that was pretty awesome night of truck racing. We've seen that both races on Wednesday night this year have seemed to have been pretty awesome for the trucks. So maybe that's a trend that we need to start.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of people like that midweek race. And the trucks put on a really good showing for all the fans. Steve, what was the highlight for you of the Camping World Truck Series race last night?
Actually, just kind of the whole thing. I mean, it was, I think the Camping World Truck Series as a series tends to have some of the best racing. I mean, it's super close all the time. I again, as I mentioned earlier, I'm an Ohio boy, so I'm a fan of Blaney, but I'm also a fan of Thor Sports as well. So it's nice to kind of all of those races, though. I mean, it seems like any of the Camping World Truck Series races, it seems like the top three or four guys could always win, and it is nice to see a rare Wednesday night truck race. Maybe it would be a good trend to start, kind of like, you know, the NFL has Thursday night football. Maybe NASCAR should do Wednesday night truck racing every now and then. That might be a nice thing to start.
Well, I think there's three votes for that right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Now, my heart absolutely sunk for Cole Custer. I thought he had that race in the bag. And I thought he was on his way to getting his second victory of the season. And then when the rain came out, too, I was like, oh, no, it doesn't get any worse than that for a driver. He made the best of a bad situation. In his post-race interview, Chris, I'm sure you heard that, he was questioning the move to come into victory lane at the time that they did. I think he would have preferred to have stayed out there on the track, but in the end, I don't know that it would have made that much difference for him. Well, it might have, but yeah.
Here's the thing, Sharon. Whether Cole Custer would have came down pit road during that caution, he would like to go on a victory lane, but he went down pit road. But whether or not Cole Custer. Realize it or not, he had actually been passed by Matt Crafton before the caution came out. Matt Crafton, while Cole was on the high side and Spencer was spinning, Crafton happened to slip by on the bottom of the racetrack and had taken the lead of the race before the caution flag flew. So no matter what way you slice it or dice it, Crafton would have had the lead at that moment of caution, whether Cole Custer was involved or not, because Spencer spun on the high side of the racetrack where Cole was running, and then Crafton the veteran that he is, was able to sneak by on the bottom of the racetrack. So,
kind of a side note to that, Chris, is somebody was generating a picture last night trying to make the point that the point that you just made is that Matt Crafton had passed him, before he went to pit lane. And what was funny about that is while they're trying to make that point, the timing and scoring is showing Cole Custer in the first position. And,
right.
And I had to kind of laugh at that. You can't make that point when the timing and scoring is still showing Cole Custer. He needed to take that photograph maybe a fraction of a second later.
NASCAR, you know, there was a lot of discussion last night on Twitter. Twitter absolutely went under fire who was leading the race, whether it's Crafton or Cole Custer. And here's the thing. NASCAR said that Crafton was a leader. So, and the reason that was is because the scoring line had not updated quickly enough for everybody that they wanted to see. But NASCAR had said at the moment the caution waved that the 88 was the leader. So it didn't make a difference. Matt Crafton was the leader of this race when that incident happened.
Right.
And Cole Custer was going to have to come to pit road no matter what to fix that damage. So I don't know why it created such a stir.
I'm explaining to you why it happened, because a picture was being generated that contradicted what they were saying. So,
I
agree with everything that you're saying.
Yeah.
But
there was no contradicting. Yeah. NASCAR said that the 88 was the leader, so that was the end of the story.
And I understand that, but the picture that they generated contradicted what they were saying. So,
well, the picture I saw the 88 underneath the zero.
Yeah, but
while
if
we were still
under
green
timing flag. But if you looked at the timing and scoring, Cole Custer was still in the number one position in that picture.
Right, but you're going off of TV. You're going off of TV.
Well, and so I'm not doing it. The person who generated that picture
created the confusion when they did that.
That's the point.
Well, I don't think it was a matter of confusion. I think when the pass actually happened, the TV's timing and scoring loop didn't update quick enough to change the position. So I think I don't think the issue was the person that generated the picture, and I know who generated the picture, Jeffrey Miller, who does a great job for Athlon Motorsports. He was clearly showing that Matt Crafton had taken the lead, and people were just finding stuff to rant about, and that's the unfortunate part of the deal. Matt Crafton should have been talking about Matt Crafton and whether or not Cole Custer still had the lead, plain and simple.
Right. And had they taken that picture a fraction of a second later, and it had said Matt Crafton number one, I think a lot of fans would have accepted it a lot more.
Well, I mean, see, the fans, they were still biting off on Twitter last night that they should have gone back to the last time in scoring loop. Well, what they don't know is when the caution flag waved, Crafton crossed the start-finish line, and that's when the timing and scoring had updated. So if they want to go back to the timing and scoring loop, they would have gone back to the start-finish line, which it would have shown that Crafton was the leader.
Right, and another interesting point there. Now, this again, it's a moot point actually, because it didn't happen this way. But the rain delay came out right around the same time, and there was the chance that Matt Crafton could have won that race without ever leading a full lap. He had crossed the finish line, but by that time they had called the red flag, and he really hadn't led an entire lap yet.
Yeah, actually, the red flag came out two or three laps later, after Crafton took the lead.
But the caution came out. You're right.
The caution was out first for a couple laps. Yeah, the caution was out for a couple laps, and then during that caution, they went to red flag for 45 minutes and 50 seconds.
Right.
But I understand what you're saying. It probably would have been the easiest win of Matt Crafton's career if it had all played out. And when that last restart happened, I guarantee you, when Matt Crafton, and he said over the radio last night, and Jay Pennell reported this from Fox Sports, that Crafton said he ran out of fuel, which I kind of thought was kind of funny. It seemed like they had another issue, but Crafton, when that truck stumbled, I guarantee you, he was thinking, why didn't this race just end when it started raining?
I'm sure he was thinking that. But that would have been a great trivia question for years to come, too.
Yeah.
Who's the only driver to win a race without ever leading an entire lap?
Think of how crazy Twitter would have gone then had that ended up playing out that way. It would have been berserk how crazy people would have gotten.
He may not have led a lap on a green at that point, but he did lead a lap on a caution. So, that's the way that you can look at it. But it was definitely... your heart had to sink for Cole Custer, and because he was just such a fast truck and such a fast young man, a quiet, reserved NASCAR Next driver who really just keeps to himself. But when he puts that helmet on, he's just an animal when he gets on the racetrack. And when I mean an animal, he just attacks and he thinks nothing more than just about being in first place and winning. So, it was one of those things where it fits Bristol's tagline so perfectly, where it says it's Bristol baby. And I mean, when Cole Custer spun, I mean, that's the first thing that came to my mind. It's Bristol.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
But it was a great race. I think a lot of fans really enjoyed that race for a lot of different reasons. I think Cole Custer showed us he's got the metal to really do well. I think he was composed when he had his interview, as frustrating as it must have been for him. But I thought he did a great job in a difficult situation with his post-race interview.
I know we're getting close to the end of the show, but
yep,
I thought Daniel Hemric did a nice job again last night, and I thought Dalton Sargeant did a fantastic job in his NASCAR Camping Truck Series debut. That kid had a lot on his shoulders. J.J. Haley wound up with a 14th place finish, I believe, in his debut for Braun Motorsports. But I'm telling you what, Dalton Sargeant, he's one of those drivers where he's so likable that he has so much pressure on him to perform. And I know he probably wasn't satisfied with 10th per se. He said he wanted the top 10, but I think he would rather have been 8th than 10th. But to still come out of Bristol with a 10th place finish in his truck series debut and be as strong as he was from start to finish, I think he deserves a lot of accolades.
Yeah.
And I know from what I've heard, he'll return back to the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series later this fall. So it's going to be interesting to see, his focus will get back on the NASCAR K&N E-Series schedule. But I think Dalton Sargeant proved a lot and turned a lot of heads last night. So I thought that was a productive night for that young man.
Hugely well composed for a guy who wasn't sure he could, totally do it and was somewhat doubtful in his own mind. You know, he had to just keep telling himself that he could do this and that he had this. And, yeah, he produced an amazing result for such a young guy at 17.
Yeah, and exactly what you said there, Steve. I mean, that's identical to what Kelly Crandall wrote on popularspeed.com. I mean, her article pretty much just summed up what you said. So, that's pretty spot on, but yeah, I agree.
Absolutely, and he's done so well in the K&N Pro Series. I really look to see him racing up in NASCAR's top three real soon. Hopefully, like you say, he'll be back this fall, and I think we'll see him in 2016 as well. An interesting point that we did not mention is Dylan Kwasniewski is going to be racing the Xfinity Series this weekend at Bristol.
Yeah, he'll be back for two more races. I actually broke this story yesterday on Catch Fence. Victor Obika has signed him for two more races, including Bristol this weekend, and then Road America next weekend in Wisconsin. So, obviously, they didn't have the result that they wanted last weekend in Mid-Ohio because of ignition issues, but Dylan Kwasniewski's hard work paid off with two more races for him in that 97 Chevrolet Camaro, and I think that's a good thing for him. And I know that he's just a different person. He's a different person from what I saw last year. He's so appreciative to be back in the seat. And if not for Victor Obika, Dylan Kwasniewski would still be on the sidelines. And I think that has to be commended to that young team trying to be the little engine that could.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, we're going to be going off the air here in just a few seconds, but I want to remind fans that we will continue the conversation with our sign-off after. And if you want to hear the rest of the conversation, it will be available on our podcast that you'll be able to listen to via the links that we've already posted. So with that, I want to take a few minutes, Chris and Steve. Steve is our newest new writer at Fan for Racing, and on Monday we'll be announcing a second new writer to Fan for Racing. But Steve, I wanted to take a few minutes for you to kind of give us a little background on yourself and your kind of history with racing.
Well, I went to my first race at age 9, and I'm a third-generation race fan, so I've kind of been into motorsport since as far as I could remember. I love anything, I mean, from Formula One to MotoGP to IndyCar and, of course, NASCAR. Just been really into it, and I've worked in PR in the United Sports Car Series, and I'm hoping to get a full-time PR position within the next season or two. So that's kind of the angle I come from it, and I'm looking forward to writing for Fan for Racing and being on the radio show. So.
Okay. And Chris, just so you know, we've been approved at Chicagoland Speedway. I was able to get Steve in for the credentials for this for that weekend, so we'll be there ready to for our coverage.
Great.
Okay, you didn't have to be so excited.
Yeah, I mean it's cool. It's cool.
Okay. Let's go around the table with what we're working on this weekend, or this week, and what's your Twitter handle, your social media availability is, and how fans can follow you. So, Steve, let's go ahead and start with you on that.
Well, in the next week or so, I'm going to write a couple articles, one of them most likely being kind of a preview to the Camping World Truck Series in Mosport, Canadian Tire Motorsports Park. And I will probably write some other articles as well. My Twitter is at SteveOnTheGrid, and I'd love for fans to follow me there. Pretty much willing to answer any question or, you know, do whatever research. If anybody has any question, I'd love to be in contact with fellow fans.
Okay, and is it at Steve on the Grid or at Steve on the Grid PR?
At Steve on the Grid.
Oh, okay. I thought I saw one with PR there. Okay, so that's great. We welcome you aboard and look forward to chatting with you more as the season progresses here. Steve, Chris, I know you're at Bristol Motor Speedway, so.
Yep, I will be here for tomorrow's Foot City 300 for the NASCAR Xfinity Series, and then also on Saturday night for the Irwin Tools night race at Bristol. And as always, I'll be covering everything on Twitter, and then just have to stay tuned. I expect tomorrow to be a very interesting day with Clint Bowyer, obviously being in Clint Bowyer being doing his press conference with the media. So. Just have to stay tuned, and we'll definitely have a lot to talk about on Monday, I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely. Watch for that breaking news tomorrow. No breaking news tonight, right?
Nothing that I can say just as yet, but I'm sure
okay.
I mean, here's the thing. We're getting in the nitty gritty to silly season. Silly season is probably in second or third gear right now, and it'll get in. I think in the next 3 to 4 weeks, we'll really see it kick into high gear. And here's the thing: I know that we've been talking about the Ganassi Rob Kaufman deal. You know, there's been some reports surfacing, and I'm sure you guys have seen them online. That is not a done deal yet, so it'll be interesting to see if that continues to fuse together or if that crumbles apart. And if it crumbles apart, you just have to wonder what is Rob Kaufman going to do. So I think the closer we get to the chase, all of the intentions at a NASCAR world will not be on the chase. I think some of it will be with the off-track news and who's going where in 2016. So it's going to be interesting.
I agree with you. I think it is going to be interesting because as soon as I saw that they were kind of denying that there was any deal done, I'm like, uh-oh. somebody's not happy, and that could unravel very quickly. So it will be interesting to see what Clint Boyer has to say tomorrow. So definitely be on the lookout for that big news. But Chris, thank you for everything that you do. We appreciate you. I do look forward to talking to you on Monday night for NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off at 10 p.m. Eastern Time right here on the Fan for Racing NASCAR and Race Talk Radio Network. And Steve, welcome aboard. We're happy
thank
to
you.
Have you. And our new writer is going to be with us on Monday night, so you're going to get a little bit of a reprieve there.
Okay.
but you and I can kind of talk offline a little
sure.
bit, and we'll talk about when you'll be back on the radio next, okay?
Sounds great.
So, all right. So thanks, everybody. We really appreciate all of our
Sharon,
listeners.
Sharon, before we log off,
yeah.
Before we log off, I know that there's fans wondering if there's going to be any racing on Sunday, and don't forget that the ARCA Racing Series presented by Menards will be at Illinois State Fairgrounds for the Superstore
yeah.
Chevy store, Super Chevy Stores one Allen Crow 100, and that'll be 1:30 Eastern, live on CBS Sports Network.
Yeah, we did talk about that, Chris, earlier in the night. We did our preview of the Illinois State Fair race at for the ARCA Racing Series. Who's your pick?
Man, it's really hard. Yeah, it's really hard when you go to dirt because you don't know who's gonna be a threat. But when I think of it, I think of Frank Kimmel. He's still looking for his first win with Venturini Motorsports. So when I think of winning, I think of Frank Kimmel. Finally gets the job done on Sunday afternoon.
Okay, a great pick. I'd love to see Frank win. There's a lot of Illinois drivers in that event, so. From a personal side, I'd love to see an Illinois guy win, but we'll have to wait and see what happens.
It'd definitely be interesting.
Okay. It certainly will be. So with that, we'll go ahead and sign off. Look for Fan for Racing, Fan to Fan, NASCAR and Race Talk next Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, followed by NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off, right here on our own radio network, Fan for Racing, NASCAR and Race Talk Radio. Thanks, everybody, and have a great race weekend. Take care now. Good night.